Taking the first step to treat a mental illness can be scary, I think, but it can also be very rewarding. And our guest now will help shed some light on the process of treating a mental illness. Dr. Michael Peterson, currently the Director of Hospital Psychiatric Services at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. He focuses on hospital psychiatry, including emergency and inpatient psychiatry. So we'll learn how to find the best treatment for mental health issues, how to help a loved one get access to treatment. And maybe you've had some trouble finding the best therapist or counselor to fit your needs or maybe a child's need. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've helped you've struggled, and we heard a little of that in the first 45 minutes of this show, some trouble finding the best therapist or counselor to fit your need. Maybe you've struggled to help a loved one treat a mental illness. Give a call at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Dr. Michael Peterson, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
How can you tell when a problem should be addressed by a mental health professional?
Really, it's when it starts causing problems in the person's life. And obviously, that can be to a minor degree or to a very severe degree when I end up seeing people in the hospital or emergency room. So if people aren't able to function at their job or at school, it's starting to cause a lot of problems with their relationships, now that's time where it's really where you'd want to seek mental health treatment, kind of like a medical illness, where it starts causing problems with your life, starts causing risks for you. That's when you get some attention.
And there are, I would expect, a myriad of treatments that could be available for mental disorders.
That's correct. It really depends on what you're treating and how severe it is. Sometimes it requires medication. Sometimes therapy is the best bet. Sometimes a combination of the two is really most helpful for people.
Yeah. Can you explain the difference between a psychiatrist and a therapist or counselor?
Sure. A psychiatrist is somebody who has completed medical school, so done medical training, and then they've done specialty training, residency training in psychiatry. So they're able to prescribe medicines, they're trained as a physician. Therapists can have a lot of different types of credentials, from a doctorate in psychology to licensed clinical social workers or other types of professional therapists.
And, you know, you think about this and you wonder, well, who the heck do I see, or who should I send my loved one to? How do you know which type of mental health professional to consult?
When it comes down to it, sometimes it ends up being the very practical things like how our insurance or how our clinic tends to run things. It's not uncommon for many clinics to have your first appointment be with a therapist or counselor of some type. They'll do an initial assessment, and then if it's felt that medications or more medical assessment is needed, then they'll refer you on to a psychiatrist in the clinic. Other places, they may go directly to the psychiatrist, to the physician. Sometimes as your primary care doctor feels like they're treating your depression, but it's a little beyond their feeling of comfort with their expertise, and they may refer them specifically to a psychiatrist.
Yeah. And in terms of, I would expect that insurance plays a role in this, but if you're looking for someone as a therapist for the first time, what are some things that you ought to think about?
Well, apart from the insurance piece, it's going to be you want to make sure that person is licensed, so they have formal credentials, that they have experience with treating mental illness, and that they have some expertise in treating the things that you're looking for treatment for. And that may be asking them how many other people they treat, what kind of credentials they have in their experience. It might be getting referrals from other people. When it comes to the coverage piece, you may start with your insurance and say who's covered by your insurance panel. Then the insurance company usually does that legwork of making sure they have appropriate professional credentials.
Talking with Dr. Michael Peterson today, Director of Hospital Psychiatric Services at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Questions for him about treatments as we move along, I hope you'll join in. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Wondering, you know, the this has got to be, there's always a first time for people. Either they're bringing a loved one in or they're coming in for themselves. What should you expect? Let's take that first visit. What should you expect in your first visit to a mental health professional?
Sure. Well, they're going to want to know a lot about what's been going on. So what kind of problems have you been having? How is it interfering with your life? They'll ask a lot about specific types of symptoms that you may be having, how long they've been going on, if you're aware of things that may or may not be making it worse. Particularly psychiatrists with a medical background, we're going to want to know about other types of medical conditions, medications, and also other things, alcohol, cigarettes, other substances that may be playing a role too. That will be really important to get the right diagnosis. So if we better understand what's going on, then we can try to pick the right kind of treatments that are going to work.
Speaking about treatments, Kelly on Facebook was wondering about treating anxiety with magnesium. I don't know anything about this, so.
Yeah, that's not something I'm not aware of any specific evidence about magnesium. Magnesium is an element that's necessary. Everybody gets it in their diet and things like that. Too low of magnesium might affect your muscle function and other things, but I'm not aware that taking magnesium supplements by themselves are going to have a big effect on anxiety.
Okay. Well, we'll take some calls now. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. And email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And actually, before we go to the phones, as long as we were talking about medication, the finding of the right medication can be difficult. And we had a call or two earlier about medications that, one case, didn't work very well at all, mm-hmm. and other case worked well. But so finding that right medication can be difficult. How do you work with your doctor on something like this?
Sure. So, like I mentioned, that first appointment, we're going to ask a lot of questions about what's going on and about other conditions and things. If we're pretty certain about a diagnosis, we're going to have a good idea about which class of medications is most likely to be helpful. And then based on that, we can help pick something that's not going to cause problems with someone's other medications. And also try to be open about what side effects are likely and possible and trying to balance that out with patients too. So I like to try to have the person's input as much as possible so they know what to expect and what to watch for. It's true, though, that we often know what class of medicine's most likely to help, but we don't know necessarily which specific medication. So we may have to start off with a medication. If the person's not getting better or they're having side effects, then I need to work with them to try a different medication and see if that one works better. And that can be a very frustrating process because it takes a while.
Yeah, it takes, and it's not like a cut or a broken arm or something like that where you have very specifically no right mm-hmm. away. You're dealing with a person's mind, I guess, in a lot of situations, and so it's... Even though we are much better at it than we probably were even 10 years ago, there's still a bit of an art involved with it.
Absolutely. There's still a lot that we don't know. We would like to have better medications and more specific treatments, and we're still working on that. We're learning a lot more about the medications and how they work, and also what's going on in the brain in these conditions.
Yeah. Well, Jude, here in Wisconsin, has something for us. Let's go to Jude. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question isn't for the doctor, but it's something I can share with people that are dealing with depression, as I am with my own depression from what I've learned from therapy, and also what the therapist had shared with me and what I can share with other people. I have learned that most of my depression in my life has been caused by situations within my family and my husband's family, a lot of mental health issues there, and just living with that stress for so long. So my therapist said just to write letters to these people and just to let them know that they need to work out their own issues, that they're not my issues. And that's really, really, really helped me a lot and also helped me in my relationship with my husband, is just to get rid of those stressors, and even that has helped me tremendously, and I just wanted to share that with anybody out there that's dealing with depression through family issues.
Hmm. Thanks so much for calling. Dr. Peterson, comment from you.
I would agree, and I think that reflects a certain type of therapy, too, that we know our relationships with other people can be affected by depression, but they can also sometimes cause or worsen some of the depression, too. So
at least in Jude's case, the writing of letters helped to free her up.
Yeah, I think that's a specific way of maybe setting some limits in relationships that weren't very functional and really helping the person be able to focus on their own health and recovery. And sometimes people really need permission or a specific way to do that.
And thinking about therapists, and I sort of asked this question of our previous guests, but is this a sort of a long-term process, or how do you know?
Sure. It's kind of like treatment for a variety of conditions. Sometimes it can be very time-focused. A lot of the types of psychotherapy that have the best evidence are really designed to be time-limited, so anywhere between 2 to 3 months with a really focused kind of a therapy may be able to get at some of the major issues and really turn the corner. Depending on what you're treating, some people really do need to stay in it longer term, both for ongoing support and because it's a more chronic type of an illness.
Yeah. Ralph in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, my question is, my son is 24. He's been diagnosed bipolar, schizophrenic. He was taking a drug. It's actually a shot every 4 weeks up in Vega. And he's had problems with drugs in the past. I mean, he still smokes pot to this day, so I'm wondering if that kind of, you know, took away the effect of the drug itself. And now I can't get him to go to the doctor at all. I mean, my understanding is he can't be forced. He's 24. He can't be forced to take medicine. The whole family is, we don't know what to do.
Well, I thank you very much, Ralph, for that call and that question, and we're going to ponder that for a bit. We need to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us. But stay listening, because Dr. Michael Peterson will have some comments right after we take a look at the news. So stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about mental illness today. Have you had trouble finding the right treatment for a mental illness? Or getting the person who needs the help to a doctor for that help? Our guest today, I hope, has some answers for you. I'm sure he does. Dr. Michael Peterson, currently Director of Hospital Psychiatric Services at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. He focuses on hospital psychiatry, including emergency and inpatient psychiatry. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've struggled to find the right medications to treat your symptoms. Maybe you have some questions about psychiatric hospitalization. I hope you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And Dr. Peterson, just before the break, we had Ralph from Milwaukee call us, and a 24-year-old son with bipolar, schizophrenia issues, and he's, Ralph and probably the other family members are just not able to get the son to go and seek out help.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad Ralph called in, because this is a tough question that I see pretty commonly in the hospital. So, you know, I think the first step, it sounds like things that Ralph has probably already tried, but trying to convince his son to go in with them because they're concerned about him. Ideally, if they can point out ways that they think that maybe he's not doing as well, that his son could see and agree with, and maybe even offer to go to the doctor with him. Because sometimes people have had bad experiences with medication or feel like they're being forced into things, and that makes them more reluctant to go in. And ideally, one of those things would help and get the person more willing to go in and consider treatment, even if it means changing treatment.
There are some legal issues with it. I mean, you really can't force.
That's the problem. If you've tried all those things and the person's still just not willing to go and you can't make them go, then you end up being limited by state laws. And in Wisconsin, it's pretty restrictive. Wisconsin errs on the side of giving the person as much of their rights as possible, including the right to refuse treatment. So legally, you can't force somebody until there's really pretty dangerous behavior. And dangerous means a risk of harming themselves or harming someone else. Or it could mean a risk that they're so severely impaired that they just can't take care of themselves or take care of their medical conditions. So then it's a matter of just kind of keeping an eye out, and anytime there's a concern that there may be a risk to his health, to his safety, or the safety of others, putting in a call to county mental health services, putting in a call to the police to start establishing a pattern of behavior. And eventually there may be enough evidence saying, yeah, this person's a risk. They need to be hospitalized involuntarily.
But that takes some time.
It does. It does. And it has to be through the county services and through the police. Physicians can make an assessment and recommendation, but we have to get the police and county involved.
And Ralph, I thank you for that call, and certainly good luck to you and to your son and the rest of your family. Jerry, up next with a question for us, I believe. Jerry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. This is Jerry. I'd like to ask Dr. Peterson a question. My daughter is 48 years old. She's had bipolar disorder for over 25 years. She was misdiagnosed for probably the first 7 years. And then she was in treatment. And mostly her symptoms are depressive. She gets into the depressive phase and difficulty getting out of that. Right now she's in a depressive phase. She also suffers from anxiety disorder. She's on Clonopin, Wellbutrin, lithium, Synthroid, and those are the only ones I can recall right now. But she's having these strange symptoms that are she's losing her balance, falling. She's very forgetful, dizzy. She has no affect, blurry vision. She can't understand, like, a direction. If you say, I want you to get something out of the drawer in the kitchen that has the towels in it, she can't even put together where that is. So her doctor just recently decreased the Clonopin here, increased it to 1 milligram, twice a day, and then two at bedtime, and now he's cut her back to a 0.5 milligram twice a day and 1 milligram at bedtime in the last few days. I'm thinking this might be a side effect, but I'm not sure, and if it is, I'm not, how long will it last?
Well, you raise a lot of things there, Jerry. Thank you so much for calling. Dr. Peterson, you certainly aren't in a position to be able to prescribe, but can you comment on what Jerry had to say?
Sure. So I guess the general answer would be, you know, if you or your loved one are having new side effects or problems that might be related to the medication, it's important to let your doctor know, or if it's really an urgent thing, definitely be seen in an emergency room. I would say, though, that medications for things like bipolar and schizophrenia, where they can be very helpful for people, they do have risks of side effects, too, especially if the doses are incorrect, blood levels get too high, or if they're interacting with somebody else's medical conditions or other medications. So it's important to take a look at that and make sure that all of your doctors know which medications you're taking. So things like lithium, it's important that your primary care doctor knows you're taking it too, because it can interact with common medications that somebody might take for blood pressure or pain or things like that too.
So having complete communication among the various doctors is extremely critical.
I would say that's very important. That's something I've worked really hard on in our hospital, is making sure we have good communication, because for a while, it was harder to be directly in communication with primary care doctors, for instance. But they need to know what we're prescribing. We need to know what they're prescribing to take care of somebody and really try to minimize the risks. And it also helps to, I think, reduce stigma in the long term, because psychiatric illnesses are medical illnesses. So we need to treat them that way. And the more we try to hide them, the more it creates stigma. So being open about that's important.
Yeah. Jerry, thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, we've been pretty open about that. We ourselves don't have any shame in having problems, but there are people that don't understand. And as far as doctors and communication, all of her doctors belong to a network, so everything that one doctor does is online, so the other doctor can review it. So that part of the piece is it's there and it's available to all of her doctors.
Good. Yeah, that's really important to provide good care, to have that communication be open like that.
Yeah, thank you again, and good luck, Jerry. I appreciate your call very much. Crystal in Milwaukee up next. Let's go there. Crystal, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to ask if your guest could talk at all about any of the positive psychology practices that are out there, and how, if he knows anything about any studies or the efficacy of practicing mindfulness or gratitude or other, positive things to support mental health.
Thanks for calling.
So it's two big areas. I think those things have value for people in general. Everybody has some degree of stress and difficulty in coping with those things. And things like mindfulness, meditation, positive psychology approaches can be helpful in general. There also is evidence for those things helping or being a useful treatment approach for people with depression, for anxiety in particular. And some of that research, particularly around mindfulness and meditation, has been done here at UW as well. So it's something that people have started using more and more and incorporated into different types of psychotherapy.
Yeah, and so it's used here at the UW as well.
Absolutely. It's become very common to include some aspects of mindfulness and meditation in a lot of types of therapy. Some of it formally included, like a therapy called dialectical behavioral therapy. Part of it involves mindfulness. And part of it, just individual therapists may incorporate that into other types of therapy, too, to work with people.
Yeah. Crystal, thank you so much for calling. And let's go to Catherine next in Madison. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I would like to know what medications are used to treat psychoathymia and what the side effects are.
And what, psychoathymia?
Cyclothymia. So
okay.
Cyclothymia, just to help everybody out, it's less commonly known as bipolar disorder, but it's kind of like a relatively more mild form of it. So people still have ups and downs in their mood, but they're not quite as extreme as with bipolar disorder. Because it's so similar types of medications are likely to be used. You may use different types of mood stabilizing medications, from lithium to some of the anticonvulsant medicines or antipsychotics. You may also use some of the antidepressant medications. Depending on the pattern of the mood ups and downs and how severe they are, you and your doctor may decide on different types of medications.
And as we look at the classes of medications, you mentioned the classes in general. Are there several classes?
There's a number of classes of medications.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned some different types of medicines that have mood stabilizing effects.
Yeah.
Right now, medications are mostly named for the condition they are initially designed to treat,
okay.
But we know they're not that specific. We know that different medications affect different types of brain chemicals and may work on depression and anxiety, or may work on things like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. So we may see in the next, 5-10 years, a move to rename the medication classes more towards what they do in the brain. Say, decreasing dopamine effects, rather than calling it an antipsychotic or a mood stabilizer.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. Catherine, thank you for calling. Mary, in calling from Iowa, up next. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a 15-year-old grandson that as a young child, he had been sexually abused by a family member on his mom's side, but he had counseling. And then last week, he went to the school counselor with his, he said he had homicidal thoughts toward his stepmom. And so they admitted him in an inpatient in Dubuque, but they really didn't do any, they didn't do any psychoanalysis, or they didn't actually do any treatment. But within a couple days, they said that he could be discharged and treated as outpatient. But he wants help, and he thinks that it would be better if he was inpatient and he could be getting schooling, because he had these thoughts, the school doesn't feel comfortable with letting him come back to school, and they don't feel comfortable with taking him home because of his thoughts. And so they did get a court order to keep him, but they've only kept him a few more days, and they're having a hearing today. And the problem is that if he is discharged, there's really no place for him to go, because my son and his wife have called numerous places. They don't have any beds anywhere. And so it's kind of like he's in a limbo. And he really wants help, but it's not like it's available. So, you know, where do you go next? Or what? And they've talked to their insurance company. The insurance company patient advocate felt like, yes, it would be beneficial for him to be inpatient, and that they would be willing to cover it, but there's no place for him to go.
Boy, what a tough situation, Dr. Peterson.
Yeah, and that's a really complicated thing. So it sounds like this is a situation where insurance, the treating physicians, family all feel like longer-term inpatient or residential care is appropriate. But there really are relatively few hospitals that do that, and it's not uncommon to have to look out of state and, you know, even a few states away. And I know that happens sometimes coming from here, too. You know, there's relatively fewer psychiatric inpatient or residential beds than there were many years ago. So that can make it really hard to find the right kind of treatment setting.
Yeah. So where would you go online to look for, let's say, places that might be able to take him?
Yeah, if you start, again, searching on the internet can be challenging
right.
for these things, but looking for residential or inpatient psychiatric facilities, probably in this case, searching specifically for facilities that are able to work with adolescents.
Yeah.
Ideally, the hospital that he's in, which is probably more of a typical acute inpatient unit that people only stay for a week or two at the most, they may have some referral information about other facilities they've worked with for longer-term residential-type care, which may go on for months at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have kind of exhausted that. They don't. I mean, they don't feel like they're getting that assistance from the hospital, and there aren't, in our area, there aren't really, and I don't know even if there's any, but adolescent psychiatrists that really deal with the whole issue. And then when they call these other places, like they've called to Cedar Rapids, and they said, well, you know, that they can't really tell you when they're going to have a bed, and you could sit in emergency room for a while, but they're not really sure that they'll have a bed for you even then. And so they're kind of like their hands are tied. They really don't know what to do. And, you know, they don't want to wait until something happens, you know.
Right. What a conundrum.
Yeah.
I guess all they can do, I mean, is keep looking and keep hoping that something will turn up for them. And, you know, I'm trying to think, even here in Wisconsin, are there long-term places here in Wisconsin?
There's a few specific units that that deal with longer-term hospitalizations. Probably the closest one would be Rogers over in Oconomowoc, has certain specialty units for things like eating disorders or specific types of units for adolescents. But there are relatively few.
Yeah,
and then you have
Rogers
to start looking.
Might be one, and at least if you can go someplace there, they may have other advice. So it's worth looking into, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And Lynn in Eau Claire, on to you. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry. Oh, my God. That's all I have to say about your last caller. What a conundrum. Yeah. Indeed. I want to say that a complete physical workup is so important. I was on the psychiatric meds merry-go-round for years, only to find out that I suffered from Hashimoto's thyroiditis. My thyroid is dying. And with careful monitoring of my medication and some mindfulness training, I'm really good. But it's just finding a competent physician, finding someone who knows what to look for. Yeah. And it has saved me years and years of heartache being diagnosed correctly. Yeah. And thank you.
Thanks very much for calling, Lim. And it's good to hear some positive result there, Dr. Peterson.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. That's it's really important to look at kind of all parts of your health and make sure we're not missing something else. You don't want to too quickly jump and say something's a mental illness alone and miss something else. But it can go the other direction, too. So that complete assessment is really important.
Roger, we'll go to you next. Thank you for calling. Hi, Roger.
Hi, it's a wonderful program. As a recovering adult patient, the one that struck me was a young man who was so paranoid that he couldn't face going anywhere. And as a minority, there are programs out there. It's harder for youngsters and folks like him, but sometimes the only way to do it is hear it from your peers. And along that line, program that I got into was adult drop-in centers just to combat the isolation and to learn more about mental illness in general and share our angst and our hopes and progress. And one of the places that I love is Racine Friendship Clubhouse in Kenosha, and there's several other sister clubhouses around the state, like Yahara House on Grand Avenue, Yahara in Madison, Grand Avenue in Milwaukee, and they just have saved a lot of people and keep us from isolating. And they're monitored, and you go to workshops, you learn a lot of things, and it's just the way to go.
Well, I thank you very much for that, and you're nodding in agreement on that, Dr. Peterson.
Yeah, I think having peer supports is really a valuable piece along with other types of mental health treatments. And some places include peer support specialists as part of the treatment team, some of the county mental health centers. Also organizations like NAMI that have groups run by and for consumers with different types of mental health issues can really share with and support each other.
Thank you again, Roger, for your call. And Barb, you are up next. Hi, Barb. Thank you for calling.
Yes, my daughter has conversion disorder. She was diagnosed over 3 years ago. And she's been seeing 3 different psychiatrists and whatever else, but nobody's been helping her.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, conversion disorders can be a very difficult thing to treat and also can be very misunderstood. So just to briefly describe then, a conversion disorder, essentially somebody is having pretty significant physical symptoms, but there's not any other type of medical cause found for it, and it's thought to be more psychiatric or psychologically related. And that can show up as sort of non-epileptic seizures, spells, or paralysis, or other types of physical symptoms of a wide variety. The challenge is it may be hard to get the person to accept that that's the explanation, that there's not a medication that can make that go away, although you do need to treat other things like depression and anxiety that go along with it. It's really going to be treatment around psychotherapy based of learning how to manage that. And unfortunately, they can be pretty chronic and difficult to get ahead of sometimes.
Oh, boy. If you're for advice here in the last few seconds for people in terms of getting help, where do they, what advice would you have in the last
where to get help? So you know, the safety net's going to be the emergency room, county mental health centers, things like that. Otherwise, talk to your doctors if you have a primary care doctor or other specialist. They may be able to help you get referred to a psychiatrist. Same way, too, if you have insurance, then calling your insurance and they'll have which providers are covered by them. Ask your friends and relatives, too, for recommendations of people they've trusted and had help from.
Dr. Michael Peterson, thank you so much. I hope we have a chance to do this again. Lots of callers online we didn't get to. And
yeah, I'm sorry we couldn't get to them. Look forward to having another time to visit with you.
Dr. Michael Peterson from the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store.